This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Final hour Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes and Mike Johnson. Got Craig Button coming up later in the hour. Our buddy Marcellus Wiley will call in about 5 minutes as well. And we were rudely interrupted. We had our draft going there, and you know the whole business side of radio and TV interrupted us, and we had to hit a break. But tomorrow being July 1 in Canada Day, it's supposed to be free agent frenzy. We know that it won't be. It may lead to an announcement that the NHL is going to return, and they're going to play in Toronto and in Edmonton.
Wouldn't that be nice timing on July 1st? Canada Day. Hockey comes back, and it's coming back to Canada because not only because we like hockey, but because we've done, more importantly, a great job in dealing with the pandemic. Wouldn't that be a nice way to kick off another year for Canada?
Yeah, that's. I hope that's the way people see it. I know that that's not the way everyone will see it. There's going to be people that are panicked and people that don't want sports to happen and don't want them up here and don't want athletes coming here and all that kind of stuff. I get it. But I think the glass half full way of looking at it is the way you just described it. We've done such a great job in this country. Hasn't been perfect, but we've collectively committed. And the numbers have collectively gone down from coast to coast. I think we should be proud of that. And when you consider what's happening down in the States, they're in a very different position. So if it ends up here, that'll be a sign that the NHL said, you know, maybe they didn't want to be here, but they have to be here because of what we've done in Toronto and in Edmonton. But we're doing our UFA draft. So the way this was going to work was we both have to pick three forwards, two defensemen, a goalie, and then pick a player 35 or older who's chasing a cup, so does not have a ring yet, still wants one, and we have to extend an offer sheet to an RFA. So through six rounds, Johnny, you have Anthony Cirelli. That's who you extended the RFA to, or the offer sheet to, an RFA down in Tampa. Great young player. You have Torrey Krug, Evgeny Dadonov, Tyson Berry, Robin Lehner in net, and Tyler Toffoli. So you have two more picks to be made, another forward, and your 35 and up guy chasing a ring. And I took Alex Petrangelo, Taylor Hall, Zdeno Chara, Braden Holtby. I offer sheeted Matthew Barzell, and I took Eric Haula in the last round. So I still need another forward, and I need a 35 and up chasing a cup. So we're both looking for the same thing. You are back on the clock with the seventh pick or the seventh round. Go ahead.
Well, I will head to the senior citizen category. 35-plus player looking for a cup, and I'm going to go to Jason Spezza. It has been a tumultuous season, tough start. Weren't even sure if he was going to finish the year, but I think he's shown what he can be for another couple years after Sheldon Keefe took over. He can take faceoffs on the right side. He can be on your second power play. If there are injuries, he can probably slide up the roster a little bit for a short period of time. He can play on the wing. He doesn't hurt you defensively that much. He's a good guy to have around, veteran experience-wise, and he's still hungry. He still wants to play, and he still wants to try to win. He said as much out loud. So, and he's been relatively productive for the amount of minutes that he plays, the role that he's given. I don't know what else you expect out of anybody, any age, in that role. So Spez gets my seventh-round pick, my 35 and over player, I think, on a one-year deal. I'd be happy to have him on my team.
Yeah, I like that play. I've been really happy with the way he's played all year, the way he's performed, the way he's handled everything. Remember the gong show opening night, and Babcock was taking runs at him all through our camp. It was abundantly clear.
Yeah. He's got to learn the PK, so that's why he's not playing the first. Like, get out of here.
It was a joke. It was a joke. It was clear. I mean, like, and Babcock, listen, as to be fair to him as the coach, he doesn't have to love every player the GM gives him. He doesn't. And he clearly had no time for Spezza. He didn't want him. He didn't see him as a fit. It was something that he wasn't aligned with. And I was at the time, I thought he should have more respect for a guy who's been in the league for almost 20 years and is just an all-around good guy, respects the game, loves the game, et cetera, and came here on a one-year deal at $700,000 to play in his hometown. But that's, you know, a different story for a different day. We've been down that road. But outside of that, once he got into the lineup, he has performed. Like, for that price, he has been a bargain at $700,000.
Points per dollar.
It's been
great. We're
going
to make a new stat. He's doing just fine.
Absolutely. And I would expect he'll return to the Leafs likely next year, unless, Johnny, your team picks him up. You get to him first. There you go.
When they become the GM somewhere, then I'll put a call in.
That's your move. I will wrap up my forward group with Vladdy Namestnikov. He's jumped around a little bit. Bit of a suitcase.
I like it, though. I like it,
he's
though.
He's a good player. Yeah. You've seen him a lot. You saw him in Ottawa.
I've seen him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll let you explain that pick for me.
Well,
what do you like out of him?
He's versatile, right? Because you're not going to have to spend a ton of money. Mm-hmm. He can kill penalties. I think he's one of the league leaders in shorthanded goals this year. He can play with good players. He had his best years in Tampa playing with Kucherov and Palat, I think it was, many years ago. Mm-hmm. He can play with good guys. He's not going to light it up offensively, but he's not going to hurt you. And if you pay a guy $2 or $3 million and you play him on your third or fourth line, that's okay too, because he's versatile enough, skates pretty well, has some edge to his game. He's played for pretty good teams, so he's been in, you know, some decent moments, played internationally in some big moments. I like it a lot. He's one of those. He'd be the kind of guy I would spot as a value potential signing who could give you more than his contract is worth.
Yeah, I agree. I like him. That's why I took him. There you go.
So you can be my assistant GM.
Thank you. I'm happy to do that, Johnny.
There you go.
Whatever you need from me. All right, man, let's wrap it up. Round eight.
All right, last one.
Forward. Who are you taking?
Very similar kind of player. Josh Levo.
Wow.
Yes, Leaf fans, Josh Levo. I am taking him out in Vancouver, was having a good year, got hurt. He's going to be back playing. Everywhere Josh Levo has gone in the NHL, he's produced at a pretty decent clip for the role he's been given, but also he has been a possession monster. Everywhere he's going, his underlying numbers have been fantastic. And so I love a guy who thrives in those kind of stats. Maybe he hasn't put up the goals and assists because he hasn't played enough or in the right role, but I know he's going to help my team tilt the ice in our favor whenever he's out there, whoever he's out there with. Doesn't have to play with the best players. You can play him on the fourth line. He still does a good job there. You can get him for virtually nothing. I can give him a 3-year deal at $1 million. He might sign it because he wants a little security.
Yep.
He's young, and I think he would be a very valuable kind of 10, 11, 12 forward on a team, maybe better for a good deal.
Yeah, I like that play. I think you're right. He's an NHLer. Like, he's proven that since he got to Vancouver. He proved that at times in Toronto. He had too much in front of him.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially on the right side. But he's played up the lineup in Vancouver. He's performed well. I like that pick. So I have one guy left. He's my 35 and older, chasing a cup. You took the second overall pick from the 01 draft. I will take the first overall pick from the 01 draft. I will
Kobe.
Take Ilya Kovalchuk. Yes, I am going with Kovey. I hated him when he was in L.A. I mean, I hated the way he played, the way he performed. He looked like he was just ready to get out of there. And I don't really blame him because the whole team was terrible and everything went south. And the focus was on him because he was an older guy with a big name and signed a big ticket. And it just didn't work for him. He was getting healthy scratched, you know, in L.A. It was ugly.
Yes.
And they basically
not even traveling with the team. He was doing skills work.
Yeah, it was really, really ugly. But, man, did he come alive in Montreal. Like, he found himself. He found his legs in Montreal. I thought they were going to keep him. I think it was, at the time, wise they flipped him to Washington. I'm wondering if they're thinking they should have kept him now, right? Now that they're playing.
Now they're going to make it, right?
They're in. Yeah. They could use Kovalchuk at this point. But I think he's a guy that, like, he proved he still wants to play, and he wants to play in a market that matters. So if he's chasing a cup, you know, it's one thing. If you're in L.A. and it's bad, you've played in Arizona when it's bad. That beach comes calling, man.
Yeah,
sure.
And you got $120 million in the bank, and I could see how, you know what, like, you've accomplished so much, and this is not stoking your competitive fires. My only concern is this. Hayes, what kind of team you have? Are you any good? Are you the GM of a good
great
team?
A great team? Outstanding
great
team. Potentially a dynasty team.
Then I don't like this pick for you. Because this very reason, you see what's happening with him in Washington. It's not about his energy or his attitude or anything. He has to play a certain role, and he was not able to do it in L.A. He was given that in Montreal because they had so many injuries. Top six, first power play. He was playing 23 minutes a night when he got to Montreal. If you are any kind of team with any kind of forward depth, he's not good enough to play that much, and I don't think he can play a lesser role. I just don't think he's got that in him. So to me, I think that he's dicey. If you have a good team, not sure of the fit.
Yeah, it may be a bit of a vanity purchase. I'll grant you that.
That's a great term for it.
It's a vanity purchase. I mean, he's got some wheels. He's like an old Mustang, and you know, I you're right. You got to place him in the right position, and that's what worked for him in Montreal. They had injury problems. He showed up. He started playing. He got power play time, and they said to him, I mean, Bergevin was open and honest with him. Julian was open and honest. They said, "You're here. We're going to give you a shot. We're going to give you like 2 weeks.
You got a couple weeks till we get bodies back, and then who knows?"
Yeah, yes. And he performed. To his credit, he performed.
Was great.
And that's what I'm banking on here. It is interesting with him and Spezza. Spezza has transformed into something different. I mean, he's not up for the Selke, but he can take draws, which Kovalchuk doesn't do. And Spezza right. might be the best in the league at it. Like, he is, he's right there with the types of, like, Bergeron and O'Reilly's. And, like, he's pulling in, like, 57%.
It's a specialty of his on a strong side. He's like a specialty guy. You can dump him out there in any situation, right side, he'll pull it back on his back end.
Yeah. And I think he's a player I probably trust a little bit more, Spezza. I mean, they're both, and I wouldn't have said that 15 years ago.
You know what it is, Hayes? The ceiling for Spezza, probably lower than Kovalchuk now.
Yep.
But the floor, probably higher.
Higher. That's probably the way to put it. Yep, exactly. I think Spezza has come to the conclusion that he's fine with playing 7 minutes a night on the fourth line and taking a big draw with a minute to go. Kovalchuk, I don't know if he's embraced that necessarily, but I'm hoping that he will get that message. Right? When he signs on with my dynasty.
You're going to have to deliver it strongly when you deliver that contract to him as well.
Yeah, well, and that's what I'll be doing, because he's going to have to accept the one-year deal at the league min, because I got a dynasty and I'm up against the cap. I don't have a ton of options here. You know, well, that's just the way
it's challenge you have when you run a dynasty like you have been doing. So there you go.
Yeah, thank you. So there you go. That's our draft, our UFA draft, looking ahead to Canada Day and free agent frenzy that should be happening tomorrow but will not be happening. And I don't know if we've allowed ourselves to get to that headspace about what this is going to look like when the cup is handed out, presuming it gets handed out, presuming they play, and we end on whatever it is, October 1st, let's say, and teams have a month to fit in the draft, well, to fit in a draft lottery now to figure out, although I guess they can do that before you
well, they can do that in August, right? Once the first rounds of the first play-in things are finished.
And maybe they will, but let's say they don't for whatever reason.
I hope they don't. Why not? Build it up.
Give us something else to get to, I guess. So you got that. Then you got the draft. Then you got free agency. You've got, I'm assuming, the moratorium before free agency where teams and players can speak for a few days anyway. It may be condensed.
Days.
May not be 5 days. It may be only two. There could be offer sheets thrown around. It's going to be bedlam, man. There's going to be a month of craziness going on.
You have buyouts. You have arbitration that has to happen after that as well, after free agency. There's a lot to squeeze into those 2 months, 6 weeks, whatever it might be. A little more condensed than a usual summer.
Yeah.
But you know what? Like, listen, after what everyone's been through, if they're able to get through the summer and get to a cup, man, everyone will be delighted, and whatever it's going to end up being. You'll probably have the whole month of October off, the whole month of November off, and probably the majority of December off, if I were to guess today.
Yo, I don't think they're playing until January. I think
so. Even if you make it all the way to the finals, you're probably going to have 3 full months off.
Yeah.
So that's about the same as a regular season, right? You finish June 15, you get July, August, September 15, you're back in camp. So it's around the same amount of break. Just a different time of the calendar.
Yep, for sure. All right. I think, have we caught up with Marcellus? Is he there, Mullen? Or I can't hear you. Is he there? Okay, yeah. Here's our buddy Marcellus Wiley from FS1. What's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing great. Just getting caught up on my hockey talk, it sounds like.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're all in the same state of mind in terms of assuming it's going to happen, but no guarantees. You know, I guess we'll wait to see what happens when we get there. The NBA... same thing. Baseball, same thing. NFL, I saw Rodney Harrison is saying now he can't picture an NFL season actually happening. Where do you stand on the NFL and the likelihood of, you know, 32 teams and 32 markets and this actually going off without a hitch?
Oh, it's going to go on, and it's going to go on with a hitch. Like, I think you almost have to build into the equation, into your mindset, that it's going to be imperfect. And what are you going to do? So, I've already converted my mind to understanding, because of the economic pressure of this situation, that the NFL will start and will play games. But I don't think they're going to play with fans. They've said that they're going to leave it team by team, city by city, based on restrictions. But imagine with me if the NFL season does resume on schedule and you have CGI in the stands in terms of just your computer generating the images of fans and the excitement, kind of a laugh track. Oh, they're yelling for a touchdown. Oh, they're upset at their quarterback for throwing an interception. From the viewer's perspective at home, you don't know any difference. I mean, I watch Jurassic Park all the time, and I haven't seen a dinosaur ever in my life. But, boy, you watch that movie, you think it's real as it gets.
Right.
And here's the thing about it. People forget that sports are television products. As much as we love going to the arena and getting our popcorn, our beer, getting our jerseys and our favorite players to sign an autograph or get a picture with them, those are millions of dollars in terms of gate receipts. But when you talk about national television rights and local television rights, those are billions of dollars. So the focus needs to be on the B, not the M. So I think right now the NFL has to come to the realization, like the NBA is, hey, we got to keep this as much as we can and focus as a television product, and everything else will be bonus. Yes, it's a new norm. It's a new way of really understanding the product and really digesting the product. But in full focus, how many times have you sat there and watched a whole day of Red Zone or three games in a row and you could jump channels and see all the games, and you're sitting there in your living room for 8 hours and you're like, I love this day. It's Sunday. It's a religious holiday in the football world. I think that's where the focus needs to go. And when guys catch corona, which they will, they're going to be treated like a physical injury. 2 weeks out, it's actually going to be less time missed for coronavirus and quarantine than it would be a high ankle sprain. That's the only way to look at this.
Listen, Marcellus, that Sunday you just described, that's Hayes every Sunday. We're Canadian. We can't go to a game. I guess we can drive down to Buffalo. But that's what he does every weekend. Flips around for 12 hours straight and just watches from the pregame shows right to the end of the postgame show. So you're right. Television will drive the bus on this one. You mentioned corona. Is that, I mean, we've been so caught up with baseball, basketball, hockey, trying to get going because they're going to start a little earlier. I saw that the NFL pushed back or canceled the Hall of Fame game and ceremonies. What's the greatest hurdles for the NFL to try to get over to get going on time?
I think the greatest hurdle is just that transferring of mindset to no fan experience, and that's not suppressing the product, making people really focus in on just the television product, and the realization that your favorite player may get corona and be out for a few weeks, like an ankle sprain. And that's just the way the game goes. We can't predict when that happens. Does Patrick Mahomes get it in the AFC Championship game and has to potentially miss the Super Bowl? That's the world we may be living in, but we still have to proceed and see if that is the reality. So in a situation right now, you have to cancel the Hall of Fame game. Like,
of course,
you don't want a bunch of retired and elderly people coming out. We've seen that before. Excuse me. The Hall of Fame game definitely couldn't go on as planned. And it's been canceled, what, twice in the last 5-6 years already because of playing conditions and other issues. So I knew that was coming, but no one wants to play in a preseason either. So, hey,
that's a bonus.
Let's go for it.
Yeah, exactly. That's a bonus for the two teams. They're like, that's cool, man. I don't need to fly to Ohio and play out there. Yeah, we're chatting with Marcellus Wiley. I'm intrigued to see how these different leagues take on social justice and what's going on in terms of protesting and Black Lives Matter. We know where this is going with the NBA. You know, they're going to have Black Lives Matter painted on the court. They're going to allow the players to replace their own names with some sort of slogan or statement based on social justice. And I'm sure there will be parameters on that. You know that. But they're going to allow the players to have some sort of suggestion or some sort of opinion on how they want to play that out. The NFL, I can't picture it. I mean, we've been looking at the NFL and wondering where they're going, and Colin Kaepernick's been at the forefront of all this. Can you picture a scenario where the NFL would allow the players to do what the NBA players are going to do, where Black Lives Matter is painted on the 50-yard line as opposed to the team's logo? Can you picture that happening with the NFL?
I can't. Like you mentioned, Colin Kaepernick, obviously, they apologized to the players they didn't listen to, but still didn't name Colin Kaepernick by his name. So that lets you know that there's still some distance in terms of how far the NFL will go as a business, as a product, in terms of letting everyone express their social justice issues. If you are able to put a jersey on that says Black Lives Matter, is someone else able to put MAGA on their jersey, Make America Great Again? And we know where that can take it.
But that's the thing.
Yeah, like if you're going to be allowed to have freedom of speech and freedom of expression, it has to go both ways. And it can't be just where the flavor of the month is right now, or the fad, or what everyone is now leaning into. It has to be something that is open with no parameters. If you allow someone to express themselves, how can you now go to someone else and suppress their voice? So that's going to be opening up a can of worms and Pandora's box. The NBA, I think, is making a mistake. One is just a gesture, like to paint something on a court doesn't change the reality. Like, I get the symbolism, but it just feels gestified, if that's the term, where it's just like, how does that materialize to the real world? So, and it's interesting, a lot of people, it's funny because, you know, Black Lives Matter right now, and I'm a black man, a former black athlete, people just expect you to fully accept things. And I tell people I was born in 1974, and my life has mattered ever since 1974. And I've been climbing my own hill and fighting for myself and fighting for my family and my people for all that time. And Black Lives Matter started in 2013. Respect to them, but I've been long down the road of fighting for me before this cause. And if you really look into the mission statement, there are some things that really pop out that don't interest me. They want to break up the nuclear family. I pride myself on being a husband and a father of four and having that nuclear family. And they want to disrupt it, in their own words, on their mission statement. And they also want to fight white supremacy. And I never thought anyone was supreme to me, a black person or a white person. I've never had that mindset. I've never had that expectation that someone was greater than me. And I never had that reality where I felt white supremacy is in the way. I'm a black man hosting a show on the show on Fox with another black guy who replaced another black guy. And there are countless examples, but I let everyone kind of figure that out for themselves. But if you really take a look at the mission statement for Black Lives Matter, a couple of things really jump off that really are eyebrow raising. And we all know that the statistics support that if you have a two-parent home, you're in such a better predicament than if you don't. And I don't understand an organization that is actually supporting or promoting that disruption. It just makes no sense to me.
Well, I think what you say about the gesture is something that's going to be on the players to follow through with the league, because it feels as if the league, you know, is trying to put together a plan that will get the players to play so that they can play and that they can all make money. You know, like, and if it means we're going to paint this on the court, then that's what we'll do. If it means you can put something on the back of your jersey, that's what you can do up to a limit. As we know, like, as you pointed out, if it's open season in terms of what political statement you want to make, you know, can someone say something about China? Is that allowed? I don't think it probably isn't,
probably
based
not
on what's happened the past year in the NBA. But
great point.
It's, you got to think that it's on the players then to make sure that this isn't just, you know, the cynic in me suggesting that the owners and the commissioner are like, okay, take this, but make sure we're playing, right? Like, we're playing, you know, and we'll see. We'll see if the players, you know, hold their feet to the fire, so to speak, because you're right. It's one thing to make a gesture. It's another thing to make something tangible and to actually put forth, you know, money and get things happening here.
Yeah, let's not have another patronizing gesture. Like, it's kind of empty in terms of substance, but it makes the splash in terms of statement. It has to be followed through, and you're right. It's on the players. And in that respect, you have to start off with your biggest ask, you know, in any negotiation, any form of leverage. You don't start small. You start big. And if this is the greatest ask from the players, that, hey, can I change my jersey name from James to Black Lives Matter? I'm like, for those who are truly feeling the weight and impact of these issues, I don't think it's as meaningful as you think it is. It feels better to those wearing those jerseys than to those watching those same players in those jerseys. So hopefully they can step it up in terms of gravity and magnitude of the ask, because right now I think that's a little too light.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, we're into July as of tomorrow, so hopefully we've got the real stuff cooking soon. We got the NBA, hopefully the NHL, Major League Baseball, and like you said, the NFL in a couple months, you know, come hell or high water. They're playing, man. It's probably going to happen.
They're playing. Football's a hazardous sport. It's bad for your health already. Corona's not stopping football, trust.
Right. It feels that way. Great stuff, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
All right. Take care, guys.
There he is, Marcellus Wiley from FS1, longtime NFLer, longtime Buffalo Bill. Regular here on the show, always great catching up with him. Craig Button is in waiting. We'll catch up with Craig. We'll get his take on the draft lottery, get his take on what's going to happen come the draft, how he feels about Edmonton and Toronto as a hub city in the NHL, because that's where it's trending towards, or it feels like it is. We'll catch up with Craig next.
Now, back to Overdrive.
All right, thanks again to Marcellus Wiley for joining us earlier this hour. Tomorrow, Canada Day. As of now, we're off, but if there's an announcement between now and tomorrow about these hub cities, there's a chance we could be on. We'll find out tomorrow, I guess.
Listen, I hope so. I mean, I don't think I'm going to be on. You'll be on, but
I'll
won't
be on. Yeah, you've got bigger and better things to do. I'm at home. I'll be on.
Listen, I'll call in when there's a power outage just to kill some time for you tomorrow.
Okay.
Right?
Good. I like it. So we represent Ontario, two Ontario boys. We're both from Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like Toronto could be a hub. You know, it sounds like that's where it's trending. And we need an Alberta boy, although he's not born and raised in Alberta, but he lives out there now, and he's in Calgary. I guess he's not in Edmonton, but you know what I'm saying here, MJ. Let's get an Alberta representative on the show. Here's our buddy Craig.
Well, listen, that Edmonton promo tape had parts of Calgary and Jasper and
everything.
Who knows? So it probably had Craig's backyard in the promo tape, so he might as well let us in on the story.
Yeah, go ahead. Speak for your province, Craig. How do you feel about that, Edmonton being a hub?
Hey, I've been here for 20 years. Somewhere along the line, they're going to have to give me Alberta citizenship at some point in time. But I'll tell you what, these Westerners, they don't just hand out citizenship easily. You got to go through a lot of different exams and pass a lot of tests. But Edmonton's one of the, has been Alberta and BC, as we well know. Canada, let's just start in Canada. Canada has been an outstanding model. Now, we know that there's been some different cities and provinces that have had greater challenges, but Alberta has been excellent. They really have, you know, through their phases, you know, handling things, testing available to all citizens. So, you know, when you're trying to create an environment, a bubble, that minimizes risk to the greatest extent possible, knowing that there's not every certainty covered off. I mean, the players want to be in those spots if they're going to play. They don't want to be in high-risk spots. I mean, think about Dallas was a hub city candidate at one point in time. Do you think players are going to Texas? You know, you know, Vegas now is falling out for the city, and they should fall out. I mean, it's rapidly rising and spreading. If you're a player, why do you want to be in those places? And I think the NHL, I said this in the outset, I love the fact that the NHL, you know, waited. They didn't, you know, lock into a city. They said, we're going to continue to evaluate and continue to evaluate. And I think that that's where you find yourself going into July. And, you know, you look at Alberta, that's done a really good job. Toronto has just opened up, but Ontario seems to have things in order, and, you know, you hope they stay on the same lines. But if you're going to have a return to play, the players need to know and have confidence that where they're going to play minimizes risk to the greatest extent possible.
Craig, you've been around the NHL offices, you've been in the board meetings and GM meetings and all those different things. How much pressure would there be on the league at a league level to have one city in the States just to kind of balance out the representation of clubs in the NHL?
All things being equal, I think that there's no question they would like to have it balanced, Mike. And, you know, not just to represent, you know, where 24 teams are in the NHL, but also their broadcast agreement with NBC. So, you know, they would like to make sure that they can, you know, provide an environment for NBC. You know, hey, essential travel is not allowed between the borders right now. So I think in an ideal scenario, that's the one that would work the best. But as we've seen, the virus doesn't operate under ideal circumstances. It has a mind of its own, and, you know, that's why the league has to adapt. But the pressures would be significant, Mike. And you know that, and Brian, you know that as well, as they should be. But because of where we're at, you know, you can have an ideal situation, but ultimately you have to go to the ideal. And if the safest environment is two cities in Canada, then... And remember, this is collaborative with the Players Association. It's not like you can shoehorn it in and say, yeah, well, we're going to Vegas as a team. You know, you might not get the cooperation from the players, and that could cause even a bigger problem.
We're chatting with Craig Button. So MJ and I had this discussion yesterday coming off the weekend and the draft lottery where it's still yet to be determined who's going to have that top pick. 16 teams still technically in the running. And we believe Lafreniere will go first overall. And I kind of felt for him, I'm sure it was deflating on Friday night, because he's like, where am I going? Am I going to Detroit, Ottawa, Buffalo? Who's going to take me? And at this point, he doesn't know. But we kind of differed in our opinion in terms of whether or not that was a good thing for Lafreniere. And you know him better than we do. You've scouted him. You've been around him. Do you get the impression, like, would he have been kind of salivating by the idea of being the man? Like, let's say Detroit got that pick. He's the king. He walks in. He's the number one guy. He's the number one prospect. Or do you think he would maybe prefer a team like Pittsburgh or Toronto to win it? He steps right in, and he's got a chance of winning a cup maybe in his rookie season.
Well, here's what I'll tell you about Alexi. He was the first overall pick to Rimouski, who were a very bad team. So, you know, being the first overall pick and understanding that you're going into whatever the situation is, I mean, Alexi's not going to, be hesitant about doing that. He'll embrace it and do it. But, you know, every player is competing to win and to win championships and to be the best they possibly can be. I can tell you this, in his first year as a rookie in the Quebec League, I mean, Rimouski just rose right up in the standings. And they got upset in the first round of the playoffs. And Alexi came over and played at the U18. But he was disappointed because of, you know, he had high hopes for that team and everything that it meant for his team. And so he was disappointed. So if you have a choice, and you're young, he's going to be the first pick. I don't doubt that at all. But if you have a choice to go to a team right off the bat that, you know, offers you a chance to compete for a Stanley Cup a lot sooner potentially than not, I don't know why a player wouldn't embrace that and wouldn't be excited about that opportunity. And if it just happens to be alongside a Sidney Crosby or, you know, like Connor McDavid, Edmonton isn't in the same place as the Pittsburgh Penguins. I'm just picking the teams that are fifth by points percentage going into this play-in round. That's not a bad option for Alexi Lafreniere. I don't know why you wouldn't embrace that every bit as much as going into a new situation, because Lafreniere is a star.
That's right, Hayes, just as I said yesterday, exactly how I read the situation yesterday.
Yeah, okay,
thank you very
right.
much, Craig. I feel vindicated and validated. I appreciate it. What about the draft lottery in its entirety, not just where Lafreniere might end up, but just the fact that team placeholder H, whatever it was, has the first overall pick? I'm okay with that. I don't mind it at all. I think it was great theater and will provide for more theater and also give a carrot for the teams that may get eliminated in the play-in round, a team like Pittsburgh or Edmonton that would have otherwise gone to the playoffs. How do you feel about the way that the NHL did it, where they had the lottery when they did and an unknown team has the first overall pick?
Well, you know, a couple of things is that if you go back the last three lotteries, you know, there should be really no surprise, because in four instances, a team picking lower than seventh, you know, moved into the top three. Philadelphia, 13-2. Dallas, 8-3. Carolina, 11-2. And last year, Chicago, 12-3. Which is exactly why the GMs put in the second phase. They understood what it was. And be very clear on this from my point of view. All the GMs were part and parcel of the lottery. And Mike, we talk about the NHL and everything. GMs become myopic, and they start to think about only their situation. Then they start to think, oh, God, Pittsburgh could win it. Well, we just can't have them win one lottery. They're going to have to win two lotteries. And that's how it got introduced. You know, you talk about theater. There was theater. You know, it would be nice, I guess, for Alexi Lafreniere to know, you know, where he'd be going. And I guess if anything, if you wanted to look at the lottery and say, maybe the NHL could have just waited until after the play-in round was completed. But I understand that you're trying to, use your an opportunity to try to, you know, be relevant, and I get that. But you know, there was a lot of ideas thrown about. There was a lot of ideas that were developed that led to the lottery. And you're right. I mean, placeholder Team E gets the pick. I mean, I'm fascinated now to hear, well, if there's no play-in round and the season doesn't complete it, you know, the Winnipeg Jets, because they would have been in that spot, should get the pick. Well, that's not the way it's going to work. The 8 teams that by points percentage fall into 8 to 15 will go in the lottery with an equal chance of 12.5% to win it. But
yeah, and listen, those aren't terrible odds. I mean, that's a pretty good consolation prize. I think all the players are going to want to win, I hope, you know, when they get there. I'm a little bit concerned about whether or not they can get the engines revved up. Like, once they actually get on the ice and play game one, is it truly going to feel like game one in a conventional season? I'm not sure that it will. But we had that discussion also earlier, Craig, about this opportunity for a team like the one in Toronto, where they're young. I hope they're hungry. They've been paid. This is an opportunity for them to show up and be motivated and be prepared and be in shape and take on a challenge in Columbus and go on a run. And maybe Philly's waiting for you in the second round. They can beat Philly, right? Like, before you know it, you're through a couple of rounds and you're feeling good about yourself. Go chase a cup. But if they show up and they're not in the mood or they're not prepared or they're not in shape, that's going to be a bad look for Toronto. It'll be a bad look for any team. Because if you're going to play, go play.
Yep. Well, I think that's the key phrase there, is if you're going to play, go and play. And I think once the puck drops and the players start participating in the competition, and the key word is the competition, that they'll be competing. I mean, they're not worried about getting a chance at the first overall pick. They are, you know, and you know, it could be experience. To your point, you know, you win, you go through the grind. It's obviously different than what any other player has ever gone through in the course of their NHL careers. So this is an experience that is unique, that can offer you, you know, benefits that we don't even know yet. But you're right. Get in there. Dig in. Be part of it and see where it takes you. You know, invest yourself. If you're going to be away from your family and you're going to be in the bubble and you're going to be isolated, I mean, your focus now can be, hey, listen, I just get to play hockey. And, Mike, you know, in the playoffs, you know, the focus is always there with, like normal situations, because you're just so zeroed in. It's play, day off, get ready for the next game, and the focus is there. You know, I think it'll be the same here, but you're right. With a young team that's been paid, you know, you've got a real opportunity to build that experience of not only, you know, taking advantage potentially, but learning and growing from it.
Craig, we've talked about the pressure on the players, whether it's Austin Matthews, Tavares, Marner, Nylander, Riley, whoever it is, Freddie Anderson for sure, because he's going to face a lot as the goalie. But how about the pressure potentially on Sheldon Keefe? Going up against John Tortorella, a coach who really knows how to win, did a great job last year on an upset in the playoffs. To have your team at that point, at that emotional and physical level, where you need to get to be successful in the playoffs. How much pressure do you think there will be on Sheldon Keefe to get the team in the right frame of mind before they start?
You know, Mike, it's really fascinating. I'm going to share a story with you in a second. But, like, you know, one of the things that, with this new kind of landscape, I'm interested to see what coaches also, you know, try to throw in some wrinkles. And, you know, is there going to be a Philadelphia special type situation presented, you know, that keeps teams off balance? And now that's the creative side. Now, to your question about Sheldon, I think that's a really important thing, because getting that emotional level up, getting that mindset to the point where, you know, it's every single second of every single shift, how you got to play. And I remember Jim Playfair telling me that when he came in as an assistant with Daryl Sutter, that, you know, he had won an American Hockey League championship, and he had an understanding, and he said, watching Daryl work with the NHL players, and he called it the push. He said, whoa, he goes, there was a lot of things I didn't realize. And he said he really benefited from watching Daryl, you know, provide that push and provide that day in, day out, the words, the demands, the encouragement, whatever it was, you know. So I think that that's something that Sheldon has never been through. And it's something that, you know, you start to think of as assistant coaches, who can help him with that. But the lead guy has to be that guy to get in there and, you know, keep people's attention and know that mindset and that emotional level is so key to success in the playoffs.
Always great catching up with you, buddy. Have a great Canada Day tomorrow, and I'm sure we'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Have a great day. Happy Canada Day.
There he is, Craig Button, our TSN hockey analyst. And Craig, he spit some facts, right?
Yeah.
He's always got, I think the Sheldon Keefe, John Tortorella matchup, the coach versus coach is always interesting and is going to factor in significantly. But it's one where ultimately the players have to push the game plan, and they've got to push it over the cliff for you. You yep. guys have to show up. You look at the past couple of years, Bruce Cassidy, he's made his name in the NHL. Like, he's a guy, if you were to be fired today, he'd be hired tomorrow. He'd get another yeah. job quickly.
He might get Coach of the Year this year.
He might, and he should be in the running. He definitely mm-hmm. will be in the running. I think he'll likely be nominated. But based on track record, you would have figured Mike Babcock's going to win that. And I don't think Babcock outcoached him the past 2 years. Not at all.
No.
So there's no – yes, John Tortorella's won a cup. He's been around forever, Coach of the Year, blah, blah, blah. Sheldon Keefe, there's no reason why he can't, you know,
I'm not saying
the,
it's not
punch
within
the right
him.
Buttons.
Listen, he won a Calder championship a couple of years ago, and reference to Mike Babcock, I mean, his playoff track record the last decade has not been good. With Detroit or Toronto, he's lost a lot of first-round matchups. He gets the playoffs all the time, but doesn't advance very often. So you're right. He didn't out-coach Cassidy in what you thought might be an advantage. So I'm not suggesting Tortorella. Tactically, I'm not. Who knows how that plays out? And I don't know, matchups and systems and power plays. But one thing I do know, because I played for Torts way back when he got going in Tampa in 01, whatever it was. And I have no doubt his team will be emotionally ready, like physically up to yeah. engaging at the level of intensity and competitive fire that they need to be at. As high as they can get to, and they'll get there right away. I don't know if the game plan will work. I don't know if their goaltenders will be good, but I do know that they will be ready to go. And any talk about, you know, they don't want to be there, they're going to warm up or ease their, that won't happen with Columbus. So that's the challenge I'm talking about for Sheldon Keefe, not necessarily tactically, but kind of the interpersonal dynamic of challenging guys, prodding guys, forcing guys through positive or negative reinforcement, whatever it takes to get them to that spot right away. Every player is going to get there. If they get through a week of playoff-like games, they'll get there. But I know Columbus will be there for game one. Sheldon Keefe has to make sure the Leafs are there. Because if they match the intensity, they are more talented. So they should put them in a pretty good spot to win that series if they can match that kind of desperation that yep. I know Torts' team will have.
You know they're showing up. They always do. This year, that was maybe he probably should win the coach
of the year. He's going to be in the coach of the year running.
Yeah, he
injuries
should. Those injuries,
the players.
How deflated everyone would have been mm-hmm. when Panarin left. When Bobrovsky left, when Duchesne walked.
Jones goes down, Werenski went down, Weber yep. went down. They lost their all-star
Anderson's
goalie in Korpisalo. They discover Elvis Merzlikins, and he turns into an all-star caliber goaltender. They had like 10, 12 guys. They did a game of theirs in March, just before the stop. And they had 11 regulars out. 11! And not just the bottom of the lineup, top of the lineup guys. So this training camp, the next few weeks for them will be significant. Cam Atkinson is back in the lineup. He had a high ankle sprain. They have so many pieces back. They won't be the same team personnel-wise that they were all year long because they're going to have everyone back and healthy except for Josh Anderson.
Yeah. No, they'll be more talented. Yeah, they will be more talented than they were when they were running off all those wins. And mm-hmm. that might be scary for the Leafs. But we'll see. Let's hope we get there. Let's hope they hash out what they have to hash out, and everything's all good.
Training camp, 10 days.
10 days.
That's
away.
All I know.
Yep.
10
days
I know.
Away. It's supposed to open up. We'll come back and recap a busy afternoon, tee up tomorrow, Canada Day. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Now, back to Overdrive.
Listen the distance. All right, Johnny, tomorrow, Canada Day. And as of now, we're not going to be on, but... my understanding, if at some point tomorrow the NHL comes out with an announcement that the hub cities will be in Toronto and or Edmonton, then there's a chance you might hear from me tomorrow. We'll see what happens.
I like it. I hope we have a chance. And maybe you'll call me to have a chat with you. Who knows?
Absolutely.
Because I think what will happen won't just be hub cities, because I think hub cities are part of a larger agreement. It might be CBA extension, and there will be the immediate... right in front of us, hub cities, timeline, schedules, all those things, which will be rolled out. Because I think they have the schedules all worked out. They just have to decide where and they're going to take place. But there'll be a lot of things to unpack in that, whether it's, we don't want to go down the minutia of the escrow and everything else, but that will be part of it. There will be Olympics discussion, international calendar, all these different things will be part of this new agreement. And so I hope it comes down tomorrow. Why not? Canada yes, Day. Be good I'm, timing for it.
For sure. I mean, I think it might. I mean, I guess we'll see. It is my understanding that the next couple of days are imperative, very mm-hmm. important. I think we all know that. And if both sides can come to a conclusion and everyone's all good and, you know, COVID kind of stays away as much as possible, and I think they have a better shot at that if they're up here as opposed to down in Vegas or elsewhere down in the U.S., then we might have hockey by this time next month. And if we have that, that's a good thing. And if we have baseball and basketball, it's all good. So hopefully, as the calendar turns, we move yes. back into a month that has professional sports, the big four sports. I know golf has been going, NASCAR, UFC, but let's hope that's where we're going. And as always, buddy, great stuff today. Happy Canada Day to you and yours.
Enjoy yeah, happy yourself. Canada Day to you as well. Check in on that power for sure. We can't have that happening again. That got no. dicey in the middle of the show.
It will not. I will not Garth Algar you ever again.
You need a generator out there.
I know, man. It's I can't allow that to happen. If we're doing shows from home, it can't happen. All right, we're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy your Canada Day. We are back Thursday at 4 p.m.
We'll chat then.